Blog Talk Radio.
Call it off. Yeah, because I'm hearing, but I'm not seeing anything on the switchboard. Okay, well, you got more than I got. You may want to start. Because I don't see anything.
This is Stephen. I'm prepared. Hello.
Okay. I'll try that.
Okay, David, are you on?
Yep.
I think I see your phone number here. David, are you there?
9387 is my last call.
Okay, we're going to try this. The system actually just cut my phone number off in the middle of the introduction, so we're going to do this all over again. I just wanted to welcome everyone to the Impeach Now radio show, and your host for tonight, like I said, will be myself, Karen Bracken, from the Constitutional Accountability Coalition, and David Vance, also from the Constitutional Accountability Coalition. And we're going to provide an update tonight on our call to action, and we also will be talking with the North American Law Center lead counsel, Stephen Pidgeon. And at 9:30, we will open up the phone lines for question and answers, and Mr. Pidgeon has agreed to stay on the call during that period, so you can ask questions directly to him. Our website is cactn.weebly.com, and that's C Charles Apple Charles Tom Nancy .weebly.com, and our email address is cactennessee@gmail.com, and the information for the North American Law Center is thenorthamericanlawcenter.org, and the email address is info@NorthAmericanLawCenter.org. David Vance is going to open our show tonight with a prayer, and then we'll get into the update and our discussion with Mr. Pidgeon.
Okay, we've been having some technical difficulties. Can you still hear me, Karen?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, I'm on the Skype then. All right, we'll go ahead and open up to prayer. Lord, we thank you for your many blessings. We thank you for the great country you gave us and for the Judeo-Christian heritage that we inherited. And just pray, Lord, that you'll bless our efforts to get our country back and help us to do what we had to do. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, and thank you very much. Just going to give you an update on our current call to action, which can be found on our website, again, cactn.weebly.com. And on the call to action page, we are asking that our members fax a copy of the Articles of Impeachment and a cover letter, all available on the call to action page, to the Judiciary Committee. And the list of the Judiciary Committee members, again, are there on the call to action page. So everything you need to do this call to action is there for you on that page. Then we're asking that you make a follow-up phone call to each member to ensure that the office received the fax, and then send me an email to let me know who you sent faxes to. So far, I know that some of the members of the Judiciary Committee have received 20 faxes with the articles and the cover letter, and some have received 21. These are from reports that I've gotten from our members that have actually faxed the articles and the cover letter. I've only heard from just one person, though, about validating that they made the follow-up calls. understand in today's environment, when you fax something to DC, it doesn't flood out, you know, on a fax machine. It actually goes into a computer. So we were asking our members to just make a phone call to just verify that the office did receive the fax in the computer. But I've heard from one person who did place those phone calls. So if you haven't participated in the call to action, I just ask that you go to the website and help out the effort. We're going to continue sending these articles to the Judiciary Committee to let them know that, you know, there is something going on in the country as far as our the impeachment effort. Mr. Pidgeon, Stephen Pidgeon, is the lead counsel for the North American Law Center and an expert on constitutional law. Mr. Pidgeon is also an author of several books and has a long list of accomplishments and honors that are listed on the North American Law Center's website. Mr. Pidgeon works tirelessly to promote religious freedom, economic freedom, and civil society throughout the world. Mr. Pidgeon has been a frequent guest on our show, and I welcome him back tonight. Stephen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, how you doing? I'm not real sure if anybody is out there right now because this is not working the way it should, but I hope people are hearing us. Last Thursday, Representative Louie Gohmert was the host on the Tony Perkins radio show, and I listened to that entire show. During the show, he had 80% of his callers bring up the issue of impeachment. Representative Gohmert stated the reason the impeachment of President Clinton failed was because they did not have the public behind the effort. He stated that unless we could get 50% of the American people behind impeachment, we could file the articles, but they wouldn't go anywhere. First, my question was, how does he know that 50% of the American people are not in support of impeachment, especially when 80% of his callers brought up impeachment on a show that was not even about impeachment? And a recent town hall poll of 200,181 participants found that 83.1% of the participants that took that poll wanted President Obama impeached. And these survey results are as of today at 7:45 p.m. So this is a recent survey, and I think it's very indicative that well over 50% of the American people want this president impeached. Stephen, would you want to comment on Mr. Gohmert's statement?
Well, yes, I do. You know, impeachment has an interesting history in the United States, and it's worth reviewing. You know, one of the first presidents to be impeached was, of course, Andrew Johnson following the Civil War. But after that, there have been articles of impeachment that were brought against, of course, Richard Nixon, and Hillary Clinton and her clan were behind a lot of that effort to impeach Nixon, which was, you know, I'm old enough to recall that. I remember watching all of the so-called Watergate issues that took place during the impeachment of Nixon. And that was really a shark-feeding fest. If you recall, Nixon was impeached because he had supposedly authorized the cover-up of the break-in to the Watergate Hotel. And the break-in to the Watergate Hotel, it turns out later, at least according to one of the guys who orchestrated the break-in, it was actually about making a determination as to whether or not John Dean's wife's prostitution scam was known to the Democratic National Committee. Really had nothing to do with Nixon. But he was impeached for, quote-unquote, covering it up. And he had insiders inside his cabinet that ensured that event. And his impeachment did not go forward because he orchestrated an arrangement whereby he secured a presidential pardon from Gerald Ford, who had been appointed to the vice presidency. And I assume that Representative Gohmert knows the history of that impeachment. When you get to the impeachment of William Jefferson Clinton, there was a large clamor in the United States at that time to impeach Bill Clinton. And there were multiple reasons to impeach him. Of course, there was the issue of, you know, moving nuclear secrets into China and profiting personally from that endeavor while basically betraying the nation. And, of course, China has used those nuclear secrets to its benefit now. But there were so many things that had happened under the Clinton administration, all of which were worthy of impeachment, that the special prosecutor, Ken Starr, didn't see fit to bring forward to Congress. Instead, they elected to go forward on a sex scandal, and that was kind of self-defeating. And I do not agree with Representative Gohmert's conclusion that the American people did not want Mr. Clinton impeached. I certainly wanted him impeached at that time. But the members of the Senate did not want him impeached. You know, the articles were drafted, adopted by the House, and presented by managers to the Senate for his impeachment. The Constitution does not allow the Senate to do what the Senate did in that particular case, which was essentially to rebuke it and say, you know, take these articles out of here. They had a duty to try the president on articles of impeachment and then make a determination. Are you guilty of this or not? And, you know, when I say guilty, guilty, of course, is a loose term, because when you're talking about impeachment, there really isn't a question of guilt. There is a question of whether or not there is a sufficient number of facts to warrant removal from office on the basis of high crimes, misdemeanors, treason, or bribery. And that's essentially what's before the Senate. Now, we've got to try to get a handle on what happens here with impeachment, because the president in the office of the presidency is immune from prosecution. In other words, he cannot, as a matter of law, commit a crime. He can commit these offenses that are iterated here in the Constitution, but he cannot commit a crime because he has sovereign immunity. And where that leaves the American public is it leaves us with a singular remedy. And this is quite often what you find under constitutional law, that you have a singular remedy. For instance, if you had police break into your house and obtain evidence that they were going to use to convict you without the benefit of a search warrant or a search warrant exception, well, the singular remedy you have under constitutional law is the exclusionary rule. You don't have the right to, additional damages and so forth. You have the exclusionary rule. Now, here we have the same kind of a situation. We don't have a right to have him arrested for committing the crimes because he holds the office of the presidency. He has sovereign immunity. The sole remedy we have is impeachment and removal from office for committing these crimes. Now, this is where this becomes very dramatic, because when we elect a congressperson or a senator, whether it's a representative or a senator, we essentially forfeit our right to express ourselves as a member of the polity voting in a democratic or mob rule, a kind of orientation. What we have a representative form of government, so our representative is expected to perform and do the will of his constituency. However, under a republic, the will of the constituency is not necessarily the only governing ordinance for an elected official. Their first ordinance is to uphold their oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. From that, the body politic has an expectation that their elected representative is in fact going to do that and is in fact going to give rise to their voice. So when we look at what happened to Bill Clinton, during that particular impeachment, I had advocated, and the Republicans did give some breath to the concept of at least reaching a findings of fact inside the Senate. And typically what you find in any kind of a case where you have impeachment or you have any other kind of fact-finding situation, such as a trial, or on a motion for summary judgment, or in an administrative law setting where you have a findings of fact, the officer who is governing such a thing, it is incumbent upon them to find facts and reach conclusions of law. And I pushed hard during the impeachment of Mr. Clinton to have findings of facts because, of course, if the Senate had found facts, they could not have avoided impeachment for Mr. Clinton because of the crimes he had committed while he was in office. Now, we have a much more dramatic and draconian situation here with Mr. Obama, because the crimes are much more significant, and they're tenfold, the crimes of Bill Clinton, maybe a hundredfold. And so what you see is, you see that we have an interesting situation where the president, our sole remedy that we as the people of the United States have is to demand and to secure removal from office from a person who is violating his oath of office and violating the Constitution and breaking laws. Now, once he is removed from office, of course, he can be arrested, he can be tried, and convicted for whatever crimes he's committed, assuming that there is no lapse of the statute of limitations for those crimes. So, for instance, if Mr. Obama had committed shoplifting in his first year in office, the statute of limitations would have long since expired. You can't prosecute him for that after he leaves office. However, there's no statute of limitations on the crime of treason. And this is what we're discussing here now. We're not only discussing treason, but we're discussing a couple of things here. And I think these are words that are extremely important for most people who look at the functionality of government, whether you're talking the functionality of federal government, state government, county, or local government. We have the same problem over and over again, which is a form of corruption. And these words are malfeasance, misfeasance, and nonfeasance. These are all important words in how we discuss what our representatives are doing. Now, malfeasance, as you might imagine, has to do with the Latin term mala, mala in se, which is another word for evil. So malfeasance is where you have a duty, and instead of doing that duty, you do something evil instead. Misfeasance is where you have a duty to do something, and you do something wrong. You do something that is not your duty. You do something else. Nonfeasance is where you have a duty to act, and you simply don't. Now, I can tell you that every American, particularly conservative Americans, have a great deal of experience with nonfeasance. The conservative person jaywalks, gets a ticket for $85. A liberal stands in the middle of the freeway and blocks the traffic, and they call it a political event, and they're on the front page of the paper, and they have their picture on the nightly news. The police, you might even be seeing the same policeman who ticketed you for jaywalking standing there giving the offender in the middle of the freeway a pass to commit that crime. We see this all the time where you have one law on the books, but you have two applications. You have strict application, crossing every T and dotting every I for the tax-paying conservative. And then you have another application for the liberal big mouth, touting the brainwashed status quo for the far left, who gets a complete pass for committing fraud, committing murder, committing theft, committing extortion. The list goes on and on and on with the crimes that they get a pass on. Now, you can see it, for instance, when you watch a football game. You know, one team is being called for holding because they touched the jersey of the other side. Or they're being called for a block to the back because they accidentally patted the back of the guy's shoulder pad. The other team, on the other hand, grabs the face mask of the guy in front of him, and the ref sees nothing. And when you see that kind of a circumstance, that's nonfeasance, because the ref or the lawyer or the law enforcement officer or the prosecutor has a duty to prosecute fairly and equally. That's what the Equal Protection Clause was supposed to be about, that we had fairness and equality under the law. Now we have nothing like that. You have politicians who get carte blanche to do anything and everything they want. Anything. You want to have two or three homes offshore based upon money that you sequestered out of a federal... You want to lose $3 trillion in your agency? Nobody says a word. You want to lift all the furniture out of the White House on the way out the door? That's not grand theft. you know, you and I try to do it, and if it's over $750, we're going to be convicted with a felony. But there are certain people who are above the law because the people who are expected to execute the law are engaged in nonfeasance. Now, what we see going on in Congress right now is, of course, wholesale nonfeasance. There's no question that when the Supreme Court declared that Obamacare was a tax, that immediately invalidated the entire plan because it originated in the Senate. And taxes, pursuant to the Constitution, cannot originate in the Senate. Therefore, it is a void law ab initio. At the outset, before the ink is dry, because it originated in the Senate, it is void. As a matter of law, it's void. And a void law does not have to be followed. And it doesn't make any difference what the Supreme Court has to say about it. Once they've said it was a tax as a matter of res judicata, the thing adjudicated, the situation is over. It's a void law. We shouldn't have to go back to the Supreme Court and say, would you now please void it? Now, this is another issue. The Supreme Court says same-sex marriage is now the law of the land. Well, I hate to break the news to the Supreme Court. They can only adjudicate a justiciable controversy, which means they can only strike down the law that was before them as being unconstitutional, and unless the state has enacted a law that somebody has challenged and brought before them, that law still exists, like the law in Kentucky. The Supreme Court does not have the right to rule on a law that has not been before them, period. But these are the kinds of things that you see. Now, that's misfeasance. Misfeasance, not nonfeasance. But Congress has known since 2008 that Mr. Obama is unlawfully in office. And they've done nothing. Nonfeasance. Congress has known since 2009 that Mr. Obama can't produce a valid birth certificate. They've done nothing. That's nonfeasance. Congress has known since 2009 that Nancy Pelosi and Howard Dean filed false documents with the DNCs and every state in the union in order to put Mr. Obama on the ballot, and they did nothing. Nonfeasance. All of the crimes Mr. Obama has committed, including funding Hamas out of the White House coffers in February of 2009, that's a criminal act and an act of treason because Hamas is on the terrorist list. Congress did nothing. In fact, Congress adopted his act of treason as a matter of law. Yep. That's malfeasance. So when we look at these issues, we see that what's going on here now is, so we start with those three premises. Now let's take a look at the impeachment circumstances now where Mr. Obama is concerned. Now, Congressman Gohmert made reference to the impeachment filed by Dennis Kucinich in regard to George W. Bush. And Dennis Kucinich, of course, was isolated by the mainstream media. He was castigated. He was chastised. There were people who denigrated his approach and called him wacko. And so, to a degree, Congressman Gohmert, I think, fears the same fate for himself, given what he has seen take place in the national media. Now, the national media is complicit in treason. They know. And when you have a circumstance happen, for instance, when the evidence has been made clear, and it's been made clear with really hard evidence in volumes of evidence, that Mr. Obama has been funding, training, deploying, and sharing intelligence with ISIS, and that he has been working hand in glove with Erdogan, the president of Turkey, in making sure that ISIS could make its payroll by moving a black market oil across the sands of Iraq and Syria into two different ports in Turkey to then be delivered to various ports in the world by Bilal Erdogan, the son of Turkey's prime minister. The hard evidence is on the table. And yet, what do we have from the media when the hard evidence appears on the table? What do we get from the media? Oh, you guys are talking in harsh language that we don't have to listen to. And your tone is very unfriendly. And that's not nice. It's not, I mean, this is literally what we heard from the American media when it was proven that the United States was in bed with ISIS. Now, let's just, for just a moment here, let's review some of the atrocities that this group of mercenaries deployed by the United States, funded by the United States, armed by the United States, supplied by the United States, and with whom the United States is sharing intelligence. Let's review some of their criminal acts, okay? They burned alive in a cage. You know, they had this Jordanian pilot and later a Christian woman in a cage, covered them with gas, and set them on fire. When they went in and did wholesale slaughter against the Yazidis in northern Iraq, they were selling six-year-old girls into sex slavery. They beheaded Christians one after another. They have cut the right arm off and the left leg off Christians that they didn't like and Yazidis that they didn't like, wholesale slaughter of the Kurdish people, mass beheadings, and butchery. There was even a video of one of the members of ISIS eating the heart of one of the guys he had beheaded. You remember this, right?
Mm-hmm. I remember. Yep.
Now, let's just reflect on this. That is the organization that Mr. Obama is funding, training, supplying, sharing intelligence with, and bombing Syria on behalf of. And that is the organization he seeks to put in power in Damascus. Now, Congressman Gohmert says, well, we don't have 50% of Americans that want to impeach him. 85% of Americans told Mr. Obama categorically, we want no war in Syria.
Right.
Now, I don't know what part of no he doesn't understand. But the American public said, we want no war in Syria. And what are we getting now?
Stephen,
well,
one of the
callers to Louie Gohmert did bring up the issue of this is a constitutional republic. It is not a democracy. That basically you have sworn an oath, and no matter whether you have 50% or 500% of the American people behind you, you should do your duty. And he said, well, I could take the articles of impeachment, going to go anywhere if we don't have the public support. And, you know, I listen to what he's saying, and to me it's just an empty excuse for not doing his job. That's
well, the excuse is, you know, I can tell you, here's what he's trying to tell you, is that it's not that he doesn't have 50% of the public support. And it's not that the Republicans don't occupy greater than 50% of the House of Representatives and greater than 50% of the Senate. What he's trying to tell you is he doesn't have 50% of the Republicans in Congress willing to support it.
And that caller asked that very same question, too. Do you mean 50% of the public or 50% of the House and the Senate? And he said, well, if we had 50% of the public, we'd have 50% of the Senate and the House.
No, that's not true.
I know.
That's not, and let me tell you why it's not true. First of all, you have to remember that the six corporations that own national media, the largest of those have paid no taxes since Mr. Obama has taken power. And that was a deal that was made unlawfully. Again, we're talking about nonfeasance. People at the IRS who have been denying 501c3s for conservative groups, persecuting Tea Party people, persecuting anybody who tried to start a 501c4 or 501c3, going after and persecuting the religious right with tax audits, with major lawsuits, with disqualification of exemptions, and on and on and on the list goes, all to silence the enemies on a hate list belonging to Mr. Obama, which, by the way, was one of the charges against Richard Nixon in his impeachment, maintaining a hate list. But the IRS can sit here and come after these little people who have been paying taxes and participating in the country and who love the Constitution and love America
and they turn a blind eye to the Dutch sandwich that's being used by General Electric? Not a dime. Check it out. GE has not paid a dime since Mr. Obama took office. And as a result, MSNBC is certain to never utter the words ineligible and Obama in the same evening. Hmm. Now that,
Steve,
my friends, is a form of bribery.
Steve, I have a question about in over in Syria. I mean, obviously, you know, Obama's not doing this all on his own. Other government officials, military leaders, at least some of our military leaders, have to know what's going on over there. How do they allow that? How do they align themselves and allow our country to align themselves with the people of the same ideology, maybe even, you know, supported in some way, shape, or form, 9/11, attacks on our troops in Iraq? How do they do that? How does that happen?
Well, you have to remember that in the military, you know, you have kind of three levels of
yeah,
thinking.
I'm retired,
right?
Military. I'm enlisted and retired.
Okay,
so
see if you can agree with me on this. That on one hand, you have battlefield tactics, okay? And the battlefield tactic is, you know, face-to-face, this is what we're going to do in this particular confrontation. Then you have strategy, and strategy occurs before you hit the battlefield. Now, you may have ongoing strategic changes, but you're going to strategize before you get on the battlefield in order to obtain victory. And then the third level is policy. Now, as a general rule, members of the military defer the policymaking to elected representatives of the United States.
Right.
So that the White House would be the one that determines the policy, the brass is the one that determines the strategy, and then the rank and file are the ones who use tactics to employ the strategy, which is then used to give life to the policy. So what the average American does not understand, and what the Pentagon, I don't believe, understands, although I'm sure they understand it intrinsically, but it can't be discussed in open rank and file, is that Mr. Obama, with the help of Hillary Clinton, a known Arabist, were attempting to restore the caliphate. And this restoration of the caliphate has to do with Mr. Obama's affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Ikhwan al-Musulman. He declared that he was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood to the Muslim Brotherhood leadership in Egypt in April of 2009. Now, I made this claim back in 2009, and everyone called me a whack job idiot. But it has been confirmed by Israeli intelligence and other sources who spoke Arabic and could understand the Arabic Mr. Obama was speaking to the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo.
Wow.
His direct quote is, "I am one of you." Now, the Muslim Brotherhood was formed in 1924 with one purpose: to reinstate the caliphate.
Yep.
The Muslim Brotherhood published in the mid-80s a doctrine as to how they were going to overthrow the United States.
Yeah, explanatory memorandum. Very familiar with it, yep.
You're familiar with it. It began with, of course, the concept of violent jihad, which was executed against the World Trade Center in 2001, followed by economic jihad.
Right.
And Mr. Obama has waged nonstop economic jihad on the United States of America. So what you see is, you see a fellow whose allegiance is fundamentally to the Muslim Brotherhood executing on behalf of recreating a caliphate. So look at how this caliphate was going to be recreated. To overthrow the stable governments of Muammar Gaddafi, I had no use for Gaddafi, but Gaddafi was well-loved in Libya because everyone had a standard of living. He had given up his WMD program after Bush went into Iraq. He said, "I'm done." It did not stop Mr. Obama from overthrowing our ally Mubarak in Egypt, from overthrowing the stable government in Libya, and attempting to overthrow the stable government of Assad. Now, Assad's a dictator, yes, and all that, but, you know, it was a secular Muslim society where Christians and Jews were actually able, and Druze,
were
able to live in that social order.
Yes.
And so you have to ask yourself the question, why did we have the quote-unquote Arab uprising, the Arab Spring, in Tunisia, in Libya, in Morocco, in Sudan, in Somalia, in Yemen, in Egypt, in Bahrain, and in Syria. There was no civil war until Mr. Obama unleashed al-Qaeda and al-Nusra with weapons that he had smuggled from Libya into Turkey and then into Syria to create a civil war. And all of this is on behalf of a Saudi pipeline. Now, I want to ask the listeners here tonight, how many of you are willing to raise your hand and say, let's go into World War III so the Saudis can have a pipeline running through Syria? All in favor?
Yeah, I don't think you'll get any takers.
Yeah. So what you see is what, and this is where Congressman Gohmert is you know, he says, well, the American public doesn't support this. You know, he doesn't have his finger on the temperature of the American public because he goes inside the Beltway to do his business, and the Washington Post and the New York Times lie to him like they lie to everyone else in this country.
Yeah.
And the people giving him talking points are lying to him.
I think he knows the deal. I think he's just using it as an excuse. And here's what I did after I heard about his statements. The next day I called his office to let his staff know that even though I'm not one of his constituents, that I'm one of the 50%. And I also asked, okay, what other parts of his oath require at least 50% approval by the constituents before he actually upholds his oath? And then I called my representative's office, Representative Blackburn, to let her know that Louis said we needed 50% to impeach and that I'm one of the 50%. So that's something people out there might want to think about doing. Call Louis, let him know you're one of the 50%. Call your rep, let him know that you're one of the 50% that Louis says we need. Back to you.
Yeah, Steve. I mean, that's an extremely important point. And also, you know, also keep in mind that when you talk about the 50%, I mean, here's the problem. You know, a politician saying, I'm going to wait for my fax machine to buzz off the hook, or I'm going to wait until I get 100 emails before I act, is not appropriate. And again, you have to remember that you have people in D.C. are terrified that the pontificating blowhards who sit at the news desks in downtown Manhattan are going to destroy them publicly. They're terrified of that. And, you know, and I can tell you that that pontificating group of blowhards that sit there on Park Avenue, those people are completely compromised. They've been threatened that if they say certain things, their careers will end. And the ones that have failed to capitulate are out the door. The other ones have capitulated, except the true believers in this left-wing nonsense, the people who can't understand that jihadis from Syria, you're going to get domestic violence. And so now what you see is you see a deranged group of lunatics who have no idea what it means to defend yourself. And these people are threatening to destroy the reputation and the legacy of any person who crosses that line. Now, again, what the congressman doesn't understand is that there is a huge, huge part of the body politic that has reached the end of the rainbow with this social experiment called Mr. Obama. And I'll tell you what ended that rainbow. That was that shootout in downtown Paris.
Yep.
Well, San Bernardino kind of reinforced that, I think.
Well, San Bernardino, right. But, I mean, when you saw what happened in Paris, what you see is that look at the 1.7 million Muslims that Turkey has unleashed into Europe. You've seen the video footage. They're declaring they're going to take Berlin at 26 checkpoints. They've overrun the police, throwing rocks and stones at them. We have the same situation going on in Dearborn, Michigan. Now, the people in Europe are trying to rise up to secure what little is left of their homeland. But are we going to sit here in this country and wait until we're in the same circumstance? Nope, because this is America. And we're not going to do that. This is the country where more than 300 million firearms are dispersed among the population.
And growing daily.
Exactly. And so as a consequence, Mr. Gohmert needs to know He needs to recognize that the voice of the people demanding the impeachment of Mr. Obama has been silenced by a group of lying propagandists who are being paid to sit in the pocket of the executive branch of this government. You need to understand that. If you were living in the Soviet Union, you know, and you go, if you ever travel to Russia, ask the people how they felt about living under Stalin. You know, American press, oh, it's Papa Stalin. Yeah, Papa Joe, he's such a nice guy. Killed 60 million of his own people. When the Soviet Union fell, I'll give, to give you an example of the expression of the Russian people, they went into Red Square, where Stalin had a giant 20-foot statue in red granite of himself. They knocked the statue down and poked the eye out. Then they took the statue and they put it up in a park called the Park of Fallen Statues. And behind it, they built a wall of human skulls. And that's where that statue sits to this day with its eye poked out.
Wow.
That's what the Russians, that's how the Russians felt about Stalin, Papa Joe.
Yeah.
And the Russians to this day will tell you they lived under a reign of terror. Now, Mr. Obama.
I've always found it, it's a little off topic, but I've always found it interesting that the last declared war we had and the last time we had full Democratic support for any military action that we needed to take was when we had communists as allies. It just always kind of stood out to me. Now, not saying that the Nazis were good guys by any means, but it just seems to me, there just seems to be something there to think about. The last time that we had their full support was when we had full commies for allies.
Well, you know, the communist or the communist government in Russia was just another brand of thug, right? So they can say communist, you can say communism, you can say socialism, you can, you know, put it anywhere you want, fascism. Call it what you want, but what you really have is you just have one brand of thug versus another brand of thug.
And so
what you had was under the czars. Now, the czars, you know, it was, I believe it was Alexander II. He was fairly ruthless. But his son, Nicholas II, had created a parliament, was liberating the serfs and so on and so forth. And, of course, the resentment was so high against the thug that had been in office before that, you know, tendering a revolution was easy. But what you saw was one thug was replaced by another.
Right.
And, you know, for those of us who are spiritual, and I think most of the listeners here are, you have to remember that it was a 70-year famine of the word in Russia. The crosses were all knocked down, atheism was proclaimed, and believers were persecuted. It was a 70-year famine of the word. Kind of like the 70 years that Israel was kicked out of Jerusalem and was taken into Babylon. Similar number. Now, you see the nation is, again, 80% Orthodox Christian. Now, a lot of Americans don't understand that there's been this revival of the church in Russia. You know, Moscow, even now, has the largest number of Christian churches inside the city limits of any city on earth.
Hmm. Wow.
Yep.
That was maintained even under communism. So, and also, keep in mind that the deployment in World War II was essentially to deploy the Russians as cannon fodder. So the Russians expended 16 million human lives fighting the German machine before we entered the war. Very important point. And that's allowed us to win the war against the Nazis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so these kinds of facts, these are just historical facts. And I'm not trying to, you know, I can't stand communism. You know, communism, if it doesn't work in practice, it doesn't work in theory.
Right, right.
You know, so I'm no fan of communism, and I'm no fan of the communist ideology or what happened in the Soviet Union. But we're not dealing with the Soviet Union right now.
Mm-hmm. Looks like we're headed that way at home, though, unfortunately. Looks like, you know, if we don't do something soon, we're going to be facing a similar situation here. And, you know, back to Gohmert saying that we don't have 50% support, you know, I just have a hard time believing. You know, he said if I file the articles, it'll go nowhere without the support. I guarantee you, if he files that those articles, support will come out of the woodwork. I don't think there's a Republican up there that would be able not to support him once they're filed and made public. What do you think about that?
Well, I personally believe that that is the excuse that he's using. What else is he going to say? Really, when somebody challenges him as to why, and he's right on that show, he said that Obama needs to be impeached, and he's very surprised that the American people are not screaming for him to be impeached. Well, you know,
the American people are screaming for him to be impeached. Here's, but look,
right?
Here's what
I know
you,
they
well,
are.
Well, look, wait, now wait, let's talk about this for a minute and why you're not seeing the kinds of rhetoric that, or he, why he's not seeing the kind of rhetoric he wants to see. You have a vast majority of people. Look, you know, I do criminal trials, okay? And when I do criminal trials, we often do trial by jury. And I'm probably not going to do another trial by jury because the juries now are so fearful of the government that they're slaves. I mean, if you see what goes on the day-to-day, you know, we have 7 million people in prison, and you can be imprisoned for anything. There are so many crimes on the books. Something you did or didn't do constitutes a crime. And if they put you in the crosshairs, you're looking at $50,000 or more to try to stay out of jail. And even if you get in jail, they never let go of you. They have you on, you know, parole, reporting, come down to the courthouse, give your 2 cents worth, let us know that you're still in, you know, that you're still a perp, that we can still put you in cuffs, that we can make you do the perp walk. And the average American ridicules the person who does the perp walk, who's stuck in prison clothes when he is presented in front of a courtroom of his peers, right? It used to be, you know, throw him in jail, toss away the key. But now there's 7 million Americans in that circumstance. And so people are deathly afraid that they're going to be targeted by an unlawful and arbitrary and capricious system.
Well, so I mean, it appears to me as if the only thing, the only answer we have, we can't force these men and women to do their job. You know, the only alternative we have is to replace them, but it ends up that we replace them with the very same kind of people, you know, that we removed from office. And, you know, and if they're not, within the first year, they become what we just got rid of. It's you know, so how do you end it?
We had a significant act of treason, in my opinion, from John Boehner.
Yep.
Which one?
John he ran, and the whole Republican Party ran on the premise, you need to put us in power to reverse Obamacare.
Right.
Yeah.
And after he was elected to the Speaker of the House, he became the top agent on behalf of Obama's ongoing acts of treason in the country.
That's right.
Nobody protected him more than Republican Representative John Boehner.
Yeah.
And that, and you can't protect a nation against treason. It's very difficult to do. When you have someone burning down the inside of the castle, it's hard to fight the enemy outside. And that's what Mr. Boehner did. And, of course, none of these people, with very few exceptions, represent their constituencies. They represent their corporate donors. They don't represent Americans. And in many cases, they don't represent the states they're elected from. So the question with Congressman Gohmert, and this is a question that goes before every conservative who said, I'm going to go there and make a difference. And I know there's a lot of guys who in their heart have said, I'm going to go there and make a difference. And they get there and they see a bulldozer in front of their door saying, go ahead and open your mouth. We'll blade you into the pavement. But all I can tell you is this. You know, it was Daniel Webster who said, I'd rather be right than be president.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to be right because we're at the hour now. There's no time left. This fool that we have in the office of the presidency, who's now, his policies were so dingy, would be the best way to put it. Anybody with a brain knows that socialism only works as long as until other people's money runs out. And he took office with all the other people's money gone. That's why he's had to spend QE this and QE that and QE into infinity, because there isn't any money. But the American public thinks you can vote in socialism when you're having an economic crisis. That's the same stupidity that gave us World War II. Now, a poor leader, somebody who has no skills, has never been in management, never been in leadership, never been in executive office, his first inclination is to govern like Hitler. Well, I'll just issue executive orders and boss people around like I'm the dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's stupid, because you have no cognitive dissonance going on with proper advice behind you to keep you from making mistakes. Now Obama has made so many mistakes, he just wants to get everything behind him and hide and do nothing.
Because you don't think it's just all been deliberate policies, for the most part?
What's that?
You don't think it's mostly been deliberate on his part?
Oh, all of it's been deliberate.
Okay.
He's at war with America, period.
Right. That's what I think.
And Congress knows it. And the fact, at one hand, it's nonfeasance. But when you arrive at a point that the evidence before you is treason, evidence of treason. Okay, Congressman Gohmert made the thing, you can violate the Constitution, and that's not a crime. Well, the Constitution spells out the crime of treason, what it is. And Mr. Obama has been engaged in smaller and then greater and greater and greater acts of treason since he took office. Okay. When he funded terrorist groups that were on the terrorist list, his first month in office, that was aiding and abetting enemies of the United States. And he's done that nonstop. When he invaded Libya without reporting on the War Powers Act, that was treason. When he armed al-Nusra and al-Qaeda in Libya with 200,000 tons of weapons, that was done that wasn't done accidentally. 200,000 tons of weapons, including man pads that could take down aircraft up to 28,000 feet from a shoulder-fired rocket. 12,000 of those he put in the hands of al-Qaeda. Then he engineered and arranged through Ambassador Stevens to ship those weapons into Turkey, and Recep Erdogan agreed to ship them down to his country into the hands of ISIS, who then used chemical weapons against innocent civilians and launched a civil war that has so far killed 250,000 civilians. That's a crime against humanity.
And I think all of our House members, because I'm sure a lot of them know this stuff, not all of them know all of it, but, that means that they're complicit. They're accessories, not only to his treason, but, if his treason includes war crimes, then I see them as accessories to war crimes.
Well, statute on treason, this prison of treason, if you know of treason and you don't report it and you do nothing about it, then you can be held as an accessory, or you can be held on misprision of treason, which has the same
consequences.
Yeah, and so consequently, what you see with misprision of treason, and what you see with what's going on in Congress. I'm just going to say this about that. Okay, I don't want to threaten anybody here, but I do want to make it clear. Judge Bork published a book, Slouching Towards Gomorrah.
Oh, yeah.
And if you read Slouching Towards Gomorrah, he comes flat out and says it, that the United States Supreme Court has no legitimate right to govern anymore. They've lost all legitimacy. Now, I've said this about these people who violate the Constitution. They swear to uphold the Constitution, and then they can't shut their mouth about how many different ways they want to violate it. Well, let me say this to you, Mr. President. If there's no Constitution, by what means do you hold office?
Yeah.
And the answer is no means. If you're going to vitiate the Constitution, you have no right to office. Well, here's where we are now. You have an unconstitutional presidency. He's not legally in office in any respect. He didn't legally win the 2008 election or the 2012 election. He hasn't established the fact that he's an American citizen, and he most assuredly is not a natural-born citizen. Since then, he has committed crime on crime on crime on crime and is at war with America. And Congress sits there and watches this and doesn't utter a peep. Well, guess what, Congress? You've arrived at a point of illegitimacy. You no longer have a legitimate right to govern. Now, that makes all three branches legitimate. Mm-hmm. All three branches of the federal government are now illegitimate. So you are running against, so you say there's not 50% of the people who support impeachment for treason. You know, the whole world supports impeachment for treason. The Europeans are calling him deranged.
Well, and Louis Gohmert also said on that show that not following the Constitution, that one of the callers was ranting on and on about, you know, not following the Constitution. But he actually said, well, not following the Constitution is not breaking the law. You're not breaking any laws by not following the Constitution.
Well, technically, he's right.
Technically,
the president cannot break a law. But the fact pattern exists, and after he's impeached all the laws that he did break, then he can find out exactly what that sanction is.
So let me ask you something. Let's just say theoretically, and the only person who I think would be inclined to do this, and this is not a plug for Trump, okay? And I'm not pushing Trump, but he strikes me as the only one that would even possibly do it. Let's say Trump's elected. I mean, let's say we have a country for him to take over in 2017. That's a big assumption, but let's just say that we have that, and that Trump is president, and he decides. You know, somebody presents him evidence and, hey, you know, these are crimes. These are still prosecutable. And he decides that he's going to prosecute Obama. Could we not, as citizens, if we could prove that our reps knew, could we not also find a way to have them charged with misprision of treason?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, this is how I see the future. We have an either-or ahead of us. And the either-or is this. Either Mr. Obama succeeds in his agenda. Now, if he succeeds in his agenda, America will be disarmed. The country will be declared an Islamic nation. Islam will be forced upon the American citizenry. There will be no constitution. He will be a dictator. The country will be completely disarmed. And all of those who still remember America will be rounded up, put in camps, and executed. Now, that's one scenario.
I don't think he could be successful in that. I don't think even without impeaching, because of what you mentioned at the start of the show, how many weapons we have and how much ammo we still have.
Even in a situation of a high weapons environment, a sophisticated government can disarm an armed citizen.
Absolutely.
You start out with, you come into town and you do like they did in Connecticut. It's a felony if you don't register your firearm. Then you prosecute a couple of well-known figures that indicates that, gee, we can prosecute whoever we want and nobody is immune from the law. So then the people who are used to being law-abiding citizens capitulate, and they register their weapons. Then once they register the weapons, they start with SWAT teams. Then they start working at night. They kick in your door at 2 o'clock in the morning while you're sleeping and arrest you in your pajamas and then take your firearms. And once they do that for a while, I mean, look, Stalin was doing things like writing a letter to the mayor of Yekaterinburg and said, I need 6,000 more dead this month. Kill them. Somebody. The mayor of Minsk, Belarus, used to take 250 people selected at random every Sunday and take them out of the woods and shoot them.
Good
and
Lord.
So there are ways for a government to terrorize its people into capitulating to giving up their firearms.
Yes.
So this is why, you know, people think that we're going to be able to rise up an armed revolution, but I can tell you there are methods that can be used by a sophisticated regime, and believe me, these guys know Gestapo tactics.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
To disarm the public. Okay, so that's one scenario. So don't think that that scenario is out of the question. It's not. And it is in the mind of Mr. Obama to do just that. If he had his way, he would import 60 million Muslims and put them in your house. You get out, they take your house. We're now a socialist Islamic nation, and you're homeless. You want America? Go back to your TV and watch Leave It to Beaver, because that's all you're going to get. Now, that's one scenario. The next scenario is this, and I think this is the more likely scenario. The world revolts. The world is repulsed. Not everybody in the world wants to be a Muslim homosexual, okay? And the rest of the world is going to look at this and say, hey, guess what? We're not putting up with it. Just like we didn't put up with the Third Reich before, and it doesn't make any difference how armed you think you are and how rich you think you are and how powerful you are, people will fight to the death your immorality. And so this is the next scenario. And the next scenario is the rest of the world rises up and says, we've had it with Babylon. Enough. And the whole world unites against us. Now,
and then we can answer the question. We can answer the question then is how could how did the Germans let it happen? That's
sure.
What we've always asked. And so that would be applying to us. We've got about 30 minutes left, not quite. Do we have any callers, Karen?
No, we don't. People that are on the line or possibly listening over the internet, if you would like to ask a question of Stephen Pidgeon, we also have Barbara Kate on the line. She is also a lawyer with the North American Law Center, and, of course, myself and David. Not that we can answer many questions, but if you'd like to ask a question, press the number 1 on your phone, and that will put you in the queue, and we will be happy to take your call, even if it's just to make a comment. Okay, we have one person so far, huh?
It's nice to know that I've answered all the questions in advance.
Well, we do have one caller. So again, if you want to ask a question, make a comment, press the number 1 on your phone. If you're listening on the internet, I would just suggest that you pick up your phone and dial in. The number is 347-855-8574, and it's at the top of your screen on the internet. You can see the phone number. So I'm going to take this caller. The last 4 digits of the number are, and I'm clicking on it, 8253.
Yes.
Hi, your name and where are you calling from?
Fran Austin, California.
Hi, how are you? You have a question for our guest?
Comment and update. This morning before 2 in the afternoon, I started calling and called 60 people in our Congress. I went well past the Freedom Caucus, some of the Judiciary Committee, and just anybody and everybody, just to get the message out.
Wow.
I got little to no response other than from the office of Martha Roby, and she, you know, is not from California, but her intern said that she was interested in preserving our Second Amendment and our borders, and that was about it. Everybody else was pretty nonplussed when I told them impeachment was imperative now for the menace in the White House, because, indeed, we do have ISIS contained in the White House.
Yes.
They weren't happy.
Well said. Well said.
Yes.
Well, thank
you.
I really appreciate that. That was a great effort. And I know, and that's another thing is, you know, we don't hear from every member. We have members all across the country. We have 29 states that have actual leaders for the Constitutional Accountability Coalition with members. And I know that we have so many people out there. That's why I find Mr. Gohmert's remarks insulting, because I know that we have people that have been calling him literally for months. So I appreciate your effort, and thank you so much.
And I will continue. Last time I called Desjardins's office, I was hung up on.
Wow.
Yeah, they have.
Well, we appreciate all your calls.
They've reached a conclusion. That's what part of this problem is that they've reached a conclusion, and of course they're being advised. You know, there's RNC advisement that's coming in, and so we see the long hand of former advisors that have also worked to destroy this nation. And so they're being advised with bullet points as to what's to happen and how to deflect this. And, of course, the stupid thinking that goes behind these policymakers. And remember, the guys that are advising are the same guys that screwed up Iraq, the same guys that lost $3 trillion at the Pentagon, et cetera. Which the net result of this advice is that, look, he only has a year left. We'll get rid of him. We'll use him as political fodder to elect Republicans. Now, I'm just going to ask you guys something. In 2000, we heard after 8 years of that despicable Clinton administration, I didn't know if I was going to be able to survive that 8 years. It was so disgusting and filthy. But we went through the 8 years of the Clinton administration, and because the stock market went up, everybody said, oh, it's been a great time. But at the end of the Clinton administration, the American public said, we want this guy and his Democrat buddies out. And we want to change the pace. We want to go back to a smaller, limited government, low taxation, and freedom. And so Republicans were given the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Did we get conservative justices on the Supreme Court? No. Did we get conservative politics inside Congress and a reduction in the spending level? No. Did we get any reforms whatsoever? Yeah, we got the Department of Education. Unconstitutional overreach. Yeah, and the DHS, that's right. So electing Republicans is the answer.
Mm-mm. Nope. All right, we're going to go to the next caller.
Karen, can I say something?
Sure.
I just wanted to make mention of the fact that I've been trying to get in to see Bill Posey, who happens to be my own representative. And I started this approximately 3 weeks ago. I had to fill out the mundane application. I attached the articles of impeachment. I had already taken a set personally, dropped them off at his office. This was several months ago. I finally got a call today from his aide who said, and I stress the importance of this meeting and the urgency. So his little aide called me today and said, we understand you'd like to meet with your representative. I said, yes. And I said, it's urgent. He said, the first available time we have is January the 20th. At 10:15 in the morning for 15 minutes. Ugh. And I said, did you give him the copy of the articles of impeachment that I attached? Oh, we didn't get any articles of impeachment. I said, sir, they came to your office. They've been delivered twice by me personally. And he said, well, no, we didn't see that. I said, okay, I'm going to send them to you personally now in the next 5 minutes. Could you make sure that he reads and reviews? And I said, 15 minutes doesn't allow for introductions. He said, well, he's terribly busy. He won't be back home until the week of Christmas. And then he has appointments scheduled all the way up through the 20th. Not that I believe it. I'm just bringing you up to date on what has gone on. So there is no urgency. That's where it stands.
No. Thank you, Barbara. The next caller is, so the last four numbers are 8033. Your name and where are you calling from?
This is Carolyn from South Carolina.
Hi. And your question?
Hi. I'm very active in South Carolina, even though we don't have a leader. I am making phone calls constantly. I've called all my reps, and they have a list that I've got. I don't know. I got the list off the Internet, and I don't know who all they are, but I'm surprised Lee Gorman hasn't changed his phone number. I've called him so many times. I'm calling Lee Gorman, Randy Weber, Bill Posey, Ted Yahoe, Court Lawson, Kurt Lawson, Dave Bratt, some of these people. What committee are they on?
Judiciary Committee.
Okay, that's good. I didn't have that written down. I wasn't sure. I want to know, is this website, cactn.weebly.com, is that a public website? Because I'm going to a breakfast. We have a Republican breakfast weekly. A group of men get women to get together and have breakfast and discuss politics. So I'm going to infiltrate that. I want to know if I can give out this website.
Yes, it's a public website. Anybody can go in and look at it. It's open, and you know. So yes, absolutely.
Well, that's what I need to know before I go to that meeting, because I can't take copies of all this to give out to everybody.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call, and appreciate so much for what y'all are doing.
And we appreciate you, too. Thank you so much.
I'm trying to find somebody to go set up South Carolina and do leadership for South Carolina. That's my reason for going to these meetings. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Okay. Let me put them back on. And the next caller is... last four digits are 9016. And your first name and where you're calling from.
Oh, this is Sally calling from Orlando, Florida.
Well, you know what? I think I know this lady.
Hello, Karen and Connie.
Hi, this is Sally Baptist from, and she has a Blog Talk Radio show that when we first started out in this effort, Sally was the first person to give us a platform to communicate and get our message out. And it's funny, I was listening to your radio show earlier this evening. So thank you for coming on. What can we do for you?
Well, a couple things I want to mention real quick. In the past couple of weeks, I was calling quite a few of the representatives and saying something, you know, encouraging them to do the right thing with the articles of impeachment. And then I've also been faxing, and I sent out the email. You got the email, your sworn oath of office and your refusal to impeach President Barack Obama for treason. And I've been faxing that to representatives across the country. With the key message being at the end, I go through the explanation about, you know, the obvious treason. When a sworn member of the United States Congress refuses to impeach the President of the United States for acts of treason, that member has in fact also committed treason against the United States and must be removed. When you go and allow, you empower this guy to aid the enemy, you are in fact aiding the enemy too. It's about time we realize all of these people should be impeached. They're absolutely disgusting in what they're doing, and they're violating their oath of office. That's all there is to it. And the other part, I'm going
to
be really
preaching.
Can I respond
to that? Can I respond to that before we go on?
Sure.
Yeah. I think you're dead right about this. And, of course, the problem is, and this is where you know, I want to make this approach to any congressman that's listening to this show. You know, I mean, if your aides don't take you to misprision of treason, you need to go look it up yourself. It's very simple. You can get it on the Cornell Law site, and it will tell you categorically what the sanction is for knowing that treason has been committed and doing nothing. Now, that's premise number one. But premise number two is, when you look at other nations where the body politic has risen up, whether you're talking about in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, or you're talking about in France in the Revolution of 1789, or even the Glorious Revolution in England in 1689, you look when the body politic has risen up. And I can tell you that when you have an advisor telling you Republicans won't get elected unless you keep your mouth shut about impeachment, you need to reckon in your own mind what's going to happen when we have an economic failure in this country and America wakes up and comes looking for the people who refuse
to stand up for this nation when they had the opportunity to do so and the responsibility to do so. It's not going to be a pleasant day.
I mean, they took a sworn oath. They're violating their oath in every which way, which brings me to the other piece of this, which is to every one of my fellow Americans out there, and I mean, I am going to be ranting this a lot in the near future, and Karen knows what happens when I start ranting. But the it's a very, very basic lesson here, and most people know it. They just don't apply it. The lesser of two evils is still evil. If you're going to vote for evil, you're going to get evil, and this
evil
is the garbage we're ending up with. So look in the mirror, people. If you're going to – there's something seriously wrong with Americans when they say the best we can do is evil. And that's you know, if you have any questions for me, I'll be more than happy to follow up, but that's kind of my message out there. You know, it's what they're doing is wrong.
That's a great message. And of course, the problem is now is that you have a number of people, and I've heard this rhetoric, and I hate to bring it up now, but I can tell you, there are a number of people who are willing to turn a blind eye for other people's constitutional ineligibility because they think they're going to get the droid they want with somebody who's giving lip service to what used to be well-known Americanisms. And you know, and I can tell you that kind of approach, well, this is, you know, if Obama can do it, we can do it. Let me tell you, you're not curing the difficulties in the nation by abandoning the Constitution. And, you know, and the vulnerability that is exposed under those circumstances is so huge because at any time, you know, look, I'm going to say this for Congressman Gohmert's sake. Right now, the only person in this country, in the United States Congress, that is saying anything about Mr. Obama's treason is a Democrat from Hawaii. Now, I just want to say this. If he thinks, and if Mr. Karl Rove thinks, that they're going to get Republicans elected by betraying the nation, and then using Obama's despicability to somehow pitch this tired, worn-out piece of junk that you have to elect Republicans to get rid of Obama. You know, first time, shame on me. Second time, shame on you, or whatever it is. I get it wrong just like GW did. The fact of the matter is that we've already been lied to. We got lied to in 2000. We got lied to in 2002, 2004, 2006, 2008, 2010, and 2012. How many lies do you expect me to swallow? That the Republicans are going to do something. We got betrayed by the Republicans. John Boehner gave us that line of garbage in 2010, and he sold us down the river. Don't expect my vote on the basis that we need to get Republicans elected. I don't watch the tripe on Fox News, okay?
Can I add just one quick comment to that? Maybe one and a half. But two wrongs do not make a right. And you know what? When I had Dr. Titus was on my show a couple of months back, we talked about eligibility. And apparently there have been some people who went out there in reference to Mr. Cruz. He has a Canadian birth certificate, not an American one, and they have no paperwork. They can find nothing that he was ever naturalized as an American. So technically he's probably not even supposed to be in the Senate right now because he's a Canadian. He was never naturalized as an American, if anybody cares about the truth.
Absolutely, and that is the truth, and that is the truth. Thank you. Let me go on to the next caller. We have a couple more to go, and I want to try and get everybody in. Okay, 0988. Telephone number ending in 0988. Okay, well, we're going to go to the next caller then. Come on. Okay, telephone number ending in 3051.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
This is John. I'm calling you from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, how you doing? What can we do for you tonight?
Well, I just kind of stumbled upon you guys, I guess, about a week or so ago, and I've been trying to read up on everything. I wrote a letter to our local Baton Rouge newspaper, The Advocate, back in September, telling them that that Bobby Jindal is not a natural born citizen and he shouldn't be running for president. And of course, I got castigated for that. And I was surprised that the paper even ran it, except they don't particularly like Bobby Jindal, here in Louisiana. But the reason I was calling is I've been listening to a radio station in Denver. It's the guys the man is Peter Boyles, and he's on in the morning from like 5 to 9 in Colorado. What is that, Mountain Time, I guess?
We know him.
He's pretty irreverent, and I'm just wondering if maybe Mr. Pigeon or JB or you, Karen, would be willing to go on to his show, because I'm trying to set something up to see if he will at least interview you and maybe would help spread the word. And I'm just wondering if that might be maybe another tactic that we could get more people hearing the message, because I think sometimes people, they don't hear it. It's sort of out of sight, and it's out of sight, out of mind,
Right.
That was
just
my thought.
I
came up with that when I was listening tonight, that maybe that would be an idea.
Right. Well, I know that JB did have an interview with Mr. Boyles some time ago. Of course, we wouldn't be adverse to speaking with him again, but I could just give you a little bit of a I personally called the Mark Levin show, not that I'm a fan, but he has a huge base, so I'm just kind of lowering my standards to hopefully get an audience. But I called Mark Levin. Their screener actually picked me up 3 times, asked me my name and why I was calling, and put me on hold 3 times and then cut me off. And I had the same situation with Sean Hannity last week. I was actually talked to the screener. They put me on hold, and within a few seconds, twice I was cut off. So it's obvious that some radio personalities do not want to approach this subject. But yes, I do know that JB was on Peter Boyles. Again, if you want to set something up or it works out, we would be more than happy to get on his show again. So thank you so much. And do you have our email address?
Yes, I do. I do.
Okay. All right. Keep in touch.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I just want to say one other quick thing. In October, I celebrated a birthday and I had to get a new driver's license. And it was at that point I decided to change my party affiliation from Republican to no party, so I'm now a no party person, and I sent Rince Priebus, or whatever, however he pronounces his name, a pretty nasty note telling him to remove my name from the Republican Party mailing list. I wouldn't give those guys a red cent.
Well, thank you so much. I'm a county commissioner. And I ran as an independent, and I won as an independent, and the message from the people when I was knocking on the door was just constantly, we're so sick and tired of the Republicans and the Democrats. So, and the fact that I won in a Democrat county was quite historic. So, thank you.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, we're going to do one more caller real quick. Okay, and the last 4 is 8253.
Oh, that's me again.
Oh, okay.
I'm still on, but, I will continue tomorrow. 60 I called today.
Okay.
60.
All right.
Additionally,
all right.
What else can we be doing? Also, do you know of former Congressman Joe Walsh of Chicago, who has spoken out recently? Can former Congress people be influential if current Congress won't do anything?
Well, they might be, but I would. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they can't do anything officially, but they may or may not be able to influence anybody to do the right thing. You asked what else we can do. Just a thought here. They're going to be home for Christmas recess. And especially those on the Judiciary Committee, if they happen to be from your state, you know, why not the 12 days of Christmas while they're home on Christmas leave? And maybe 12 days straight, you get different people to show up at their office and, you know, have them present the articles to them and ask them to do their job. Just throwing that out there.
Right.
I am going to be a gadfly, so I won't stop. But I've also called what I call the three witches of the West, meaning Boxer, Feinstein, what I've called Pelosi, and my representative is Julia Brownlee. But here in California, I do not subscribe to the LA Times, but somebody keeps leaving it at my garage. And when I saw the cover story today, it had the pictures of these horrific, now thankfully dead people who shot up San Bernardino and called them a dynamic couple.
Yeah, like Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
That's dynamic.
All right, well, we have one more caller, and I want to try and get them on. We've got 3 minutes. I mean, we can still go on past that time, but I want to just get this last caller on. Thank you so much. Yeah, and like David said, you know, we're saying the Judiciary Committee, but all of your congressmen and your senators are going to be home for the Christmas holiday. Find out when they're going to be in their local offices and get some people and start going down and just popping in on them and leaving them a copy of the articles and trying to get, you know, conversation going on this subject. And also, too, you can always, the North American Law Center, I mean, we don't do this. I mean, if you go back and listen to our phone calls, we very rarely ever ask for any financial help. But, you know, nothing gets done without some money. And if you feel it in your heart to give a donation to the North American Law Center, believe me, it will be put to good use to help us in this battle. The next caller is number 5614.
Good use to help us in this battle.
Hello?
Pardon? Hello?
Hi, 5614.
Oh, that's me.
That's you. Hi, how are you? And who is this?
Hi, Jackie.
Okay, Jackie, and your question?
Well, I wondered, I was listening with chills to Stephen Pidgeon's commentary on all of the weapons and the financial support of ISIS. And I'm sure I've been reaching out to as many people as I know that I have contact information, trying to get them to make the phone calls and send the faxes and whatnot. And I just feel like if we had documentation of that, is there documentation somewhere that we can use to convince people of how dire this situation is? Everybody agrees that Obama is a terrible person and we need him gone, but I don't think they realize just how really terrible he is and how he is aiding and abetting such a heinous enemy.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation, and of course getting the all of the facts on what is being done and who's doing the downloading, right? Who's giving us the information? Who's providing the information? Now, I can tell you that, you know, you have to be careful because there's a lot of disinformation websites out there. But let me just give you an example. The president of Nigeria, according to conservativepost.com, just accused Obama of aiding and abetting the Muslim terrorist group Boko Haram in Nigeria. Okay, and they have killed thousands of Christians. Okay. Here is captured ISIS leaders in Iraq confess receiving intelligence support from U.S. That's from jewsnews.co.il. And the spokesman of Iraq's Kataib Hezbollah is the one who is saying that ISIS is getting information directly from the United States. There is, let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, okay. Putin tells the army to prepare for World War III. That's from conspiracyclub.com. Vladimir Putin Putin comes out after the concerning the New World Order. But I'm trying to get you some sources. Oh, here's an article, at AmericanThinker.com. Obama is openly colluding with the enemy. Openly colluding with the enemy. That's from American Thinker, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What date is that?
The American Thinker.
Well, what's the title again? Obama is openly.
Colluding. Obama is openly colluding with the enemy. That's from American Thinker. Here is a piece from ZeroHedge.com talking about meet the man who funds ISIS, Bilal Erdogan, the son of Turkey's president. And, of course, Russia has since proven with photos, with maps.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Erdogan bought two ships in order to handle the oil. He's making $800 million a year shipping a black market oil that's being shipped with trucks out of Iraq by ISIS in two trade routes into Turkey, and then is being dumped onto the market. Okay, and here's another one: Obama, Turkish ally Erdogan support ISIS, trades terrorist oil, runs ISIS hospital, etc. That's from RickWells.us. RickWells.us. Well, I'm just trying to give you an example of how much
right.
is there. Okay.
Well, the thing is that it's just being in touch with all of this information that comes out, and that's the pictures and the things that you're talking about. I mean, I got that email. It's just going in there and really searching out this information. American Thinker,
Rick
Wells.
Well, but if somebody's already searched it out, there's no sense, and can't you share that?
Well,
on,
that's what
on
he's
the
doing
website.
Is, well,
I wrote down from conspiracy blog. I didn't get the first two or three that he mentioned because I didn't have my pencil in my hand yet.
Well, you've got to pick it up on the recording. But I can tell you, I've got to tell you just my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Americans that don't know this stuff are Americans that don't want to know this stuff. And, hiding in a church pew, waiting for the pre-tribulation rapture while you keep your head planted firmly in the sand and act like everything is normal is going to find reality knocking on your door like a hurricane. You remember the discussion about the five virgins who did not have the oil in their lamp and the door slams in their face? This is what the situation is with America. Now, America is waking up. And if you want to be the last person on your block to wake up, okay, well, keep the doors closed and keep tuning in to get your news from the national propagandists. As long as you're getting the news from the national propagandists, you don't know anything. You're being lied to, and usually they tell the lie in the very first sentence, sometimes in the headline. That's the biggest lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see it with the California shooters, trying to call them workplace violence, right? Or whatever they want to call it. I mean, but on and on and on, you get the same story over and over again from the propaganda machines. They're propagandists. They are not news organizations. They're professional liars. They are not news organizations. And if you keep going back to the sources where you're getting your news from the public broadcasters like that, you're never going to know what's going on because they're brainwashing you into thinking that these are non-events. You have to shut off the propaganda, number one. Number two, you have to do your own research. Don't believe me. Don't believe anything I'm saying. Just go look it up. There's lots of sources.
This is why we need your help, is that there's so much disinformation out there. When you do a search, you don't know if what you're getting is the truth or not.
I think maybe what Jackie was trying to get at and wouldn't be might not be a bad idea. Obviously, you can't put everything that would be presented in trial on there. But if we had, maybe we need to start putting some of that stuff on our site some of the examples or just even the sources. Put them on the site so that people could just go there and kind of look up some of the evidence for themselves to go along with the articles.
Right. I mean, I'm not. Right. And the thing is that, you know, I would not have a problem with posting sources, but I'm not going to start posting articles. I'm not going to become a newspaper.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do everybody's work for them. I mean, I would not have a problem putting American Thinker is one that you can trust. Rick Wells, he ran an article on our effort. He was one of the first people that stepped up and contacted me to do an article on what we're doing. And, you know, OAN, One American Net News Network, again, that's limited publication. But I will list some of the sources that you can go to and that we feel, you know, could be trusted in what they're saying. But, you know, I can't go in there every day and keep updating with articles and stuff like that.
That's not what I meant. But I'm afraid that I have been remiss in I don't know really where to go to trust to get the truth.
I'll do that. I mean, that's a good suggestion, and I'll work with Stephen and JB and just, you know, list some of the places where people can go to get factual information about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And then we'll find things in there that we can share to convince our fellows that they need to jump on this bandwagon and make the calls and let Louis Gohmert know that there are 84% of us that want to see Obama impeached.
Yeah. I don't know what the final answer. You know, all I keep saying is every day I have to get up and just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it until the clock has totally run out, the sand has run out. I don't think that it has yet, but you know, they say it's not over till the fat lady sings. Well, we're well past our time. I want to thank all of our callers. I want to thank Stephen so much for your wonderful insight. Barbara Kate has dropped off, but I want to thank her and my co-host David. And we will be back next Monday night, same time, same station. And again, thank you. God bless all of you. And as usual and always, God bless America. Good night.
Thank you, Karen. Good night. Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
Good night.